children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Do 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 do.
Hello and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. You guys are in for a treat tonight. This is going to be one of those things where you might want to have your hand on the phone ready to call. But before I tell you who the guest is, let me first thank Hydromay for being our new sponsor and for making a wonderful product, all nutritional skincare. And if you go onto my information page, my webpage on BBS, you'll see that advertised there. I highly recommend it. It's a great cream, great body wash and things like that, and natural. Yay, my favorite thing. Okay, now, today I have Dr. Alvin Stein as my guest. He's an MD. He has orthopedic practice in Florida. And I got to listen to him speak about toxins and all of the things that they do to our brain and neurotransmitters and how we're getting poisoned in many various ways. So I twisted his arm and got him to come on the show tonight. You can call in and ask him questions. And he has his own radio show also that is called No Bones About It, which is kind of a cute title considering he's an orthopedic surgeon. So welcome to the show, Dr. Stein.
Thank you very much, and it's my pleasure to be here with you.
Well, you are.
I enjoyed meeting you this weekend, and I was so happy for the group that we had that was listening to the presentation that we did.
Well, you know, you were preaching to the choir because, you know, naturopaths all believe in exactly what you guys were talking about, and we are thrilled that there are MDs out there that are doing the kind of research that you guys are doing and really getting to the bottom of the cause of illnesses. So I congratulate you on that, and I thank you from the bottom of my heart because it's so important to all of us that know about alternative treatments and natural medicine and things like that. So thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure. I like to consider what we're doing is not so much alternative but advanced treatment.
Yeah.
And advanced medicine and complementary medicine and not necessarily alternative. That's what somebody else wants to call it.
Yeah.
But what we're doing is a real thing because my philosophy is that I have to treat people by going for the cause of disease rather than going after the symptoms. And American medicine has been treating symptoms for years.
Yep.
And attacking the idea of symptoms. And if you treat symptoms, you get the opportunity to continue to treat symptoms. If you treat causes, you get the opportunity to eliminate the symptoms and eliminate everything that's bothering the patient. And so it's a different way to look at things. And I guess we have to go back to where I came from in all of this. I'm practicing medicine. I've been out of medical school. Or since the time I started medical school, I've spent 51 years in medicine. Out of my 72 years, that's a long time in anyone's life in any one kind of profession. And I was a mainline orthopedic surgeon, as you mentioned, and did just basic mainline orthopedic surgery, always looking to do the better things, the more important things to help people. But when I personally got really sick in 1994 after having a filling put in my mouth for a broken tooth, and being sick for 6 weeks without having any way to find out what was going on, nobody knew how to help me. It was a direction that I came upon from one of my colleagues that I went out to learn about mercury toxicity. I had a broken tooth. My dentist looked at it and said, you need to have periodontal surgery. Put in a silver amalgam filling, which I wasn't aware of all the hazards of it back in 1994.
Mm-hmm.
That evening, I came home. When I came home from his office, within about 6 hours, I was brain fogged already. I was in agony. That pain lasted for 6 weeks until one of my colleagues, who's another dentist, and we were doing pain patients together, told me he had this pain machine. come see him in his office, take a look at the pain machine. And I hung up the phone on him during the tour course of that 6 weeks. But I was coming home from my radio station at one afternoon, thought I was going to drive my car into the canal.
Wow.
Rather, I called him on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result of that, I went up to see him. He did some testing on me that I didn't understand, and in 15 minutes of using a small little laser machine on me, my pain lifted off.
Imagine
I asked
that.
Him, where did this all come from? And he showed me about a brochure, and I learned about neural therapy, detoxification, nutrition, and everything from that point on, and changed my whole life 180 degrees in the opposite direction.
I imagine so. That mercury stuff, you were talking in the seminar about how they used to fill root canal fissures with mercury amalgam, and I had that happen. I had all six front teeth when they capped them, they nicked, you know, a couple of the nerves, and I ended up having to get root canals, and they were all packed with mercury.
Absolutely. That's what they were all doing. And even I will tell you this, so that the situation is such that the dental societies are still out against the dentist who will take out mercury from anybody. Mm-hmm. They still don't believe, or they will not say openly, that mercury is the poison that doesn't belong in anybody's mouth. They still say that there's nothing wrong with a silver amalgam filling.
Oh, they say the same thing about fluoride.
Well, they say it about fluoride, too, but it goes back to what I mentioned about that frog, the frog experiment that's been talked about in so many different ways.
Okay.
And I think it's worthy of talking about it. If you take a frog and you put a frog in boiling water on the stove, the frog will jump out of the water immediately. He won't stay in the water. The water's too hot. He jumps right out of the water. But if you put the frog in room temperature water on the stove, and the frog will swim around. Now, if you turn the heat up underneath that pot of water and you raise the temperature 1 degree per minute, the frog will stay in that water and eventually get boiled in the water and die.
Mm-hmm.
But what it basically tells us is if you have a gradual change in things, you don't appreciate the change happening.
Mm-hmm.
And your body gets to accommodate it. And so we have a whole group of people who accept getting sick as a result of getting old. I maintain that we all have to get older, but we don't have to get old.
I totally agree with you.
The calendar moves forward, and I want to get older, because not getting older means I'm out of here.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I would like to get older, but I want to not do it being sick, and that's how you get old.
Yeah. Well, and you know, this whole thing about the mercury thing is so insidious. I mean, I remember when I got my teeth capped, and they did all that to me. I didn't put two and two together, and actually only put it together just as you were talking just now. But after I had that done, I got a full blown case of mononucleosis. But they said it was weird. They couldn't diagnose it right away. You know, they kept doing mono spots on me, and they were negative, negative. But I had all the symptoms, and then all of a sudden one popped up positive. And I was working in the ER.
Well, the point of the matter is that I'm not so sure how much of the mono symptoms were there as more what I said the other day, and I point out that mercury is a great imitator.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why they couldn't get the mono spot.
Right, because the symptoms for mercury poisoning are mimicking every other condition out there. So maybe the mono spot that they happened to come up with was just an immune situation that happened to come down on you a long time later. But I don't necessarily put 100% stock in all those laboratory tests.
Oh, no. Those, you know, mono spots are notoriously inaccurate anyway. But I mean, I had all the symptoms. I had a, you know, swollen, you know, jaw. I mean, all over the place. It was horrible. I tell you, Dr. Stein, I had to plan a trip to the bathroom once a day because it was that bad, and I slept the rest of the time, and I never got my energy back. And then years later, like maybe 20 years later, I was having a bridge done after I had a car accident, and the dentist got in there, and he pulled all that mercury out, and he said, "Oh, my God." He said that your last dentist that did this filled this all with mercury. And, you know, as he was pulling it out, I just sobbed. not because of what he said, but because the relief was like something had been released.
I can appreciate what you're saying, because those are what we call interference fields.
Yeah.
So the mercury
talk about the interference fields, please.
The autonomic nervous system in our body is that regulatory system which operates in the background. Everybody knows we have a central nervous system. That's the brain and the spinal cord. We know that we have a peripheral nervous system, which involves those nerves coming off of the spinal cord, going to the muscles, going to the skin, going to all parts of the body to carry out the functions that the nervous system will carry out. But behind all of this, there's another nervous system called the autonomic nervous system, which consists of a parasympathetic and a sympathetic nervous system. Those two systems are the things that control all of the functions in our body that we do not have voluntary control over. I like to call it the automatic nervous system rather than the autonomic, because these carry out the functions in the body automatically, such that if we're talking like you and I are talking now, and hopefully people are listening, the blood is going to our brain so that we are being able to cerebrate. If we eat food and the food goes into our intestinal tract, the blood will go to the intestinal tract so that it can help digest the food. And that blood leaving other areas going to the digestive tract gives us the so-called postprandial trip to the land of Nod.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after you eat, you get a little tired, you go lay down for a little while or go rest.
Yep.
The blood moves to a different place. When you go out and you're going to run and go out and jog or do exercise, the blood runs to your big muscles and does the job. And we have 10 pints of blood for a body that probably could use 40 pints under generosity, but since 40 pints of blood would be awfully heavy to carry around, nature has created a situation where 10 pints of blood approximately will do the job of 40 by having a very active and functional autonomic nervous system. Problem is, autonomic nervous system operates on something like 40 to 80 nanovolts of electricity. A nanovolt is a billionth of a volt. 40 to 80 nanovolts of electricity is an incredibly small amount of electricity.
Mm-hmm.
But things like scars on our body or other areas that create an interference with the function of this autonomic nervous system create higher electrical output at those levels and block the autonomic nervous system from functioning. They're called interference fields. An interference field could be a scar. It could be a tooth. It could be an autonomic ganglia. It could be an allergen. It could be an electromagnetic force field somewhere. It could be a dimmer in your house, the electrical dimmers. It could be anything of that nature. It could be your cell phone. Any kind of interference that will create an electronic field in your body that will interfere with the function of the autonomic nervous system blocks that nervous system from working. And you suffer the consequences of a blocked autonomic nervous system.
You know, you were talking in the seminar about that one lady that had a big scar on her head.
That's correct. And we have I've had several of the same, but that particular lady had multiple chemical sensitivities that she was suffering for almost 30 years and getting worse and worse and worse and going from doctor to doctor to doctor and being unable to get any resolution of the problem with everybody that she went to. They were all going after it from the toxin point of view and from what else could be possible, the etiology of a multiple chemical sensitivity. Mm-hmm. And I was going the same route, and I lost myself with the patient and decided that I needed to redo what I call my autonomic testing. Some people call it kinesiology or muscle testing, and many practitioners have learned this very, very wonderful technique of diagnosing and reading the autonomic nervous system of a patient. And the autonomic nervous system is like the hard drive in a computer. The entire person's history is on the autonomic nervous system. Whether it be a toxin that you've got accumulated, whether it be a scar that's there, whether it be some unresolved personal emotional conflict or traumatic conflict, they lock themselves up in the autonomic nervous system, and you are able, with the knowledge of this muscle testing, to be able to read that autonomic nervous system. And in this particular patient, I went back and I started all over again. And when I went with my muscle testing and I went around the top of her head, all of a sudden I fell into this scar and felt it. I said, what's this? Oh, I've had that since I was a teenager. I said, have you ever told anybody about it? No. Well, that scar was so much of an interference field in our testing that I stopped doing what I was doing and I injected the scar with local anesthetic. Mm-hmm. Now, the local anesthetic removes the scar from its connections to the autonomic nervous system. It mm-hmm. neutralizes the scar. It takes away its effect. The scar gets to be there because when a wound is incurred on a body, that wound heals from side to side, not from end to end. So little blood vessels grow in from each end of the wound and cross the wound to bring healing tissue together.
Mm-hmm.
Once the wound heals, the blood vessels disappear. Mm-hmm. But accompanying those little blood vessels, the artery and the veins in different places, are autonomic nerve fibers. They do not disappear. They stay there and they interlock with one another and create a network of high power interference, and that network can generate 1.5 volts of electricity. Now, you know, a 1.5 volt battery will turn on a pen light.
Mm-hmm.
1.5 volts is a C cell or a D cell battery for a flashlight.
Wow.
So when you're talking about 1.5 volts of electricity, you're talking a lot of electricity.
Yeah,
and what's happening here is that we went ahead and injected that scar on the patient, and it completely disassociated the scar from the person's autonomic nervous system by blocking all of those fibers.
That's
and the
amazing.
Patient went
that's,
into what we...
That's called prolotherapy, right?
No, that was neural therapy.
Oh, that's neural therapy. Okay.
Neural therapy, and the patient went into yin state.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what is yin state? We have yin and yang. Yin is relaxation and yang is excitation. It's like parasympathetic and sympathetic. Sympathetic is excitation and parasympathetic is relaxation. We have agonist and antagonist. We have right and left. We have up and down. We have opposites in the body to control or balance out everything so that there is symmetry in our body. If you have something that is exciting the autonomic nervous system like a scar, there's a constant excitation, the body can't function right. So now everything that comes near the body becomes hyperexcitable.
Mm.
And you have a scar like that creates all of this allergy and all of this chemical sensitivity in the patient. Once you disassociate, we threw the patient into yin state. She processed that yin state for many, many hours. We did that scar injection several times, and that was the end of her multiple chemical sensitivities. I mentioned to you that the patient would drive over four hours from her home to my office,
mm-hmm.
come into my office, spend an hour and change there, and drove back to her home, would not stay overnight in a motel because she couldn't tolerate the premises because of the chemical.
Yeah, that's an amazing case.
Yeah, we're not talking about occasional patients. We're talking about seriously ill patients in that kind of category. And things like your teeth become interference fields in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I had a young man in my office today, and he was complaining of chest pain. The young man played football. He got hit in a way. He fell, and he was complaining of chest pain. He got a lot of pain in his chest. He wasn't able to continue to play football. He lost 120 pounds. Looks pretty good, but he's been sick since about a month or so after he got to his goal weight.
Wow.
And this is going on now for almost a year and a half.
Wow.
So I said to him today, okay, he didn't want to get any more, I wanted to do some more prolotherapy, and he was anxious about it. I said, fine, I want to do autonomic testing. I want to see what's going on. Why is a 22-year-old gentleman being so sick?
Yeah.
Doesn't seem right. And on automatic testing, I found most areas were completely okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when I tested him for the field of his thoracic spine, where he was having pain that I figured out on clinical examination, he had a major interference field there.
Mm.
Okay?
From being
hit. Other area. That was the only interference field he had. Well, a thoracic spine is going to give him front chest pain also.
Sure.
Okay. So what did we find? We found that he came up with very high levels of arsenic. That was our only thing, plus he had some pesticide, and he had some, he had pesticides on board, he had dioxin on board.
Wow.
So those are the essences or the homeopathic dilutions that we used on these things. Those are the things that came up. Arsenic, dioxin, I think it was methyl alcohol, or one of the alcohols, and the pesticide.
Mm.
I asked him a question, what do you eat? And his answer, well, I eat a lot of chicken. I eat some meat, I say a lot of this stuff, but I eat a lot of chicken. I said, where do you buy your chicken? Well, I buy my chicken, fast food places, any place I can buy chicken, fast food or anything like that. Well, do we know that many of the chicken manufacturers, chicken farmers, put arsenic into the feed for the chicken because the arsenic keeps down some of the bugs in the intestinal tract of the chickens.
Mm-hmm.
But when the chicken eats the arsenic is absorbed into the chicken.
Yeah.
If you eat enough of that chicken and you can't get rid of the poison, the arsenic, you're going to collect the arsenic.
Mm-hmm.
If you recall in the discussion we had on the weekend, we talked about different people having a different ability to be able to detoxify their body. If somebody has the ability to detoxify their body quickly, they don't get all these toxic symptoms. On the other hand, if they do not have the ability to detoxify their body appropriately, then they will accumulate the toxins in the body. Every one of us has a figurative barrel in our body. If you have the ability to detoxify quickly with the best ideal genetic makeup to allow you to detoxify, your barrel that you have in your body is figuratively huge because you can keep dumping stuff in and you'll never fill the barrel up. And so long as what you dump in stays within the confines of the barrel, the body has no symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
But if your barrel is a little barrel, because you can't process poisons well, even a small amount of toxins will create an astronomical problem for you, and you're going to get sick from them. And here's
plenty of that.
Yeah, here's a boy who at 22 years old is seeing huge amounts of arsenic in his body. Fatigue. I mean, we went through the symptoms of arsenic the other day, if you recall, and
mm-hmm.
and. The symptoms of arsenic are pretty significant. They could be stomach pains. It could be vomiting, dryness in the throat, hoarseness, speech difficulties, urinary symptoms, convulsions, clammy sweats, lividity in the extremities, red eyes, delirium, death. And it all can start with mild headaches and lightheadedness. So anywhere from mild symptoms up to major symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that arsenic kills enzymes in the body, that arsenic requires a lot of health in detoxifying the body. It causes brain damage, and eventually it causes death. And arsenic is also linked to a diabetes risk. And where do you get arsenic? Like I said, you can get arsenic from drinking water. There's lots of parts of the country where the arsenic levels in the drinking water is so high, way, way, way above what the World Health Organization says is an acceptable level for drinking water.
Mm-hmm.
And because it comes out of the wells and the arsenic is coming in from the ground, those people need to do some serious filtration of their water.
Well, yeah, and then not only that, but, doing some cleansing throughout the year, too.
Absolutely. They have to take the antioxidants. They have to take the alpha lipoic acid, the N-acetylcysteine, the other things that will clear out the toxins from their body. Very important to do that. And if they don't, they're going to build him up. And that's what happens to this man. So that, what could he worry about? If he doesn't die from the arsenic itself, he still, unless he cleans it out, has a chance for skin cancer, lung cancer, kidney and bladder cancer. All of those things are part of the process of what happens from arsenicosis.
Well, yeah, and it doesn't come just from the chickens and the water. I mean, look,
we were
talking about all the foods. You know, obviously fast food has a lot of problems with it, but I mean, I know that 75% of all foods that are in the supermarket are GMO foods and they're heavily pesticided. And you were talking about pesticide poisoning too and how we ingest a lot of these toxins into our body.
Pesticides are overwhelming. We talked about that. We did talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the situation in terms of pesticides, they affect us all.
Yeah.
The pesticides have been, there have been studies on pesticides in children. Children are getting pesticides, and they get it much different than adults because they can't handle them. And they wind up with serious problems from IQ drop-off to
mm-hmm.
cancers. All of these poisons are creating major conditions. We never had cancer in children when I was in medical school. It was a rare child that had a cancer. You'd have a neuroblastoma, you'd have one of those things that are there, but and once in a while a leukemia, but now we have hospitals for pediatric cancer.
Oh, I know, it's gotten so bad.
That's 40 years later. We have a war against cancer, and the irony of the situation is that for what that war is, instead of winning it, we're losing it. Why are we losing it? Well, some of the examples go out, as you were talking about, excitotoxins, and I think that's one of the issues that people need to understand. What are excitotoxins?
Yeah.
Excitotoxins are substances that are put into our food that we absorb and that go into the brain. And when they go into the brain, they stimulate an area of the brain which is called the glutamate receptor sites. And the glutamate receptor sites force the levels of calcium into cells, and these, when you get such an influx of calcium in the cell, it activates a bunch of enzymes within the cell, and the enzymes go on to destroy the cell structure in the cells in the brain.
Mm.
What happens if you have enough excitotoxins on board? They stimulate what we call an NMDA receptor and an AMPA receptor. These are different types of receptor sites in the brain that are supposed to lock onto the glutamate, but what happens is they go ahead and they create too much activity, and we burn holes in the brain. They've shown absolutely in rat studies that when the rats are exposed to these excitotoxins, there's physical holes in the brain. The brain
Man,
just
that's scary.
Has holes in them. It's wild. I mean, it's really scary. There's no question about it. When you have an oxygen-starved neuron in the brain, it releases excessive glutamate, and it stimulates, that glutamate stimulates the next neuron, and from one oxygen-starved neuron, the next one gets this hyperactivity, and now you have two neurons that are going down. And from there, you get more, so the lesion spreads. And the same thing happens with these cytotoxins.
The thing that's so awful about this, Dr. Stein, is that almost every food that's processed is chock full of excitotoxins. They don't call it MSG. Instead, they call it hydrolyzed vegetable protein. Or there's a couple other names they have for it, too, and I don't recall.
Well, we have that. There's MSG,
mm-hmm.
which is one, monosodium glutamate. You're going
to get
that in the Chinese restaurant syndrome. That's what the MSG is from. But MSG is a food flavoring. Hydrolyzed protein is basically MSG. Caseinate is another one of these excitotoxins. Autolyzed yeast. Soy protein isolate. Carrageenan. And the biggest one, which is how it got through the FDA, was just unbearable, is NutraSweet or aspartame, which is an equal or NutraSweet. And it got into all the diet soda. It got into all of these things. It is the most potent excitotoxin. And you know, they say, oh, it's bad for phenylalanine people because it'll increase the levels of phenylalanine. But it's an excitotoxin. It's bad for everybody. And yet people are taking it down like it's nothing. One doctor, I quoted this particular doctor who was talking about the excitotoxins, and he said he considered it ironic that the pharmaceutical industry is investing vast resources in the development of glutamate receptor blockers intended to protect the central nervous system against this glutamate toxicity in common neurological disorders. That's the glutamate toxicity is the excitotoxin toxicity.
Right.
While at the same time, the food industry, with the blessing of the Federal Drug Administration, the FDA, continues to add great quantities of this glutamate material into the food supply.
Well, sure. So, well, you know, they're all together trying to kill us all off anyway. So
well, I told you about the road. That wide road in there. One side of this wide road is a gutter, and people who are healthy go down that gutter through life and never need any of the medical services. There's some of us that are that lucky. On the other side of this wide road, there's another gutter, and that gutter is the side that people fall off of that gutter. They're dead. They get one more service. They get buried or funeral of some sort. And in the middle of that road, how wide it is a road that people vacillate back and forth from one side to the other, never getting well enough to go off into the well side. And the doctors try to keep them from falling off into the dead side. Why? So that the drug companies can sell us more drugs. And the food company could put more poisons to keep us poisoned, so we need more drugs.
Well, not only that, then you get to the point where you have to use a lot of medical services, which is extremely prohibitive, cost prohibitive, and you have to do that, which keeps everybody in the medical profession working too, because of these poisons that they've put into our food and our water and our air.
Yeah, but the fact is, if the doctors were recognizing that the poisons are there, that would be a whole different story.
Oh, and yeah, that's the thing, getting them to recognize.
Let's understand that one of the things you point out that I'm an oddball because I'm an MD that's looking at this.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, you know, I respect that the naturopathic physicians in general have been looking at these things for years. I respect the fact that there are certain doctors, MDs and DOs, that have come across the line and looked for it. But why do most of these doctors come across the line looking? Because they have had a personal experience in which they personally have gotten sick. And they have sought for help for themselves when nobody else could help them. I'm one of those. And
I've had several doctors in my practice that I've taken care of. And,
for similar reasons.
You know, for the same reason, because they've been to all the specialists and nobody could help them.
Yeah, everybody goes. I have the patients who, I tell this story all the time. The patient comes in to me and has said, okay, how many doctors have you been to? I've been to at least a half a dozen, doctor. And what's your problem? Well, I have such and such a symptom. Well, what did Dr. One do for you? Well, he ordered some x-rays. What did they say? What did they say about the x-rays? He said they were normal. He said, you have nothing wrong with you. Do you feel okay? No, I was in trouble, so I went to another doctor. What did he do? He gave me this medicine. I told him it didn't work the second time. He gave me a different medicine. I left him. The next doctor did something else, and they're all doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a situation in this country of physicians basically being taught what we call algorithm medicine.
Yep.
And what's an algorithm? An algorithm is a corporate chart, for the most part, where you have a thing. Let's say you have a symptom on the top of the chart, and it says back pain. And if you go down into the next line, it says, okay, back pain could be kidney disease. It could be back herniated disc. It could be a sprain. It could be a pulled muscle. It could be bladder problems. It could be you name it, whatever. And the doctor looks down this list, and instead of working his way through all the symptoms, he looks at the top and says back pain, and he looks at one of the things at the bottom, and it says give non-steroidal anti-inflammatories, and he just forgets everything in the middle and gives the patient the treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because the HMO model says he has to be in and out of the patient in 8 minutes.
And it's hard, I know. I have a couple friends that are MD internists, And one of them said, you know, I got in trouble all the time because I took a half an hour to do a history and physical on my patients, and then I talked to them about vitamins and things. And, you know, most of the people I've talked to are terrified that the board's going to come after them because they're actually telling people about vitamins and minerals and cleansing and fasting and you know, it's really sad. You know,
I don't know if the board is going to come after them. Yeah, I don't know if the board's going to come after them for doing that, and I don't think that that should be their fear because they're giving good counsel, and if they have it documented for what it is, they're not pushing people into the surgery realm, but they're giving them options. I went to a cardiologist, and he asked me what I'm taking, and when I told him what I was taking, he told me, you're not taking enough of omega-3s, and I looked at him, I said, what, do you just come out of the closet? No, I mean, you're a closet, you're a cardiologist, and you're a closet nutritionist. The thing that you have is a real fear, because we had this big splash over the news media this past week about the use of placebos by physicians.
Mm-hmm.
And this study was done, I think it was reported in someplace in England. They surveyed rheumatologists and they surveyed internists, and they found that some 60% of them were prescribing what they called placebos.
Mm-hmm.
They clarified some of this to say, well, they would not give anybody an antibiotic for an infectious, for a viral infection, knowing that it wouldn't work, but that they would prescribe vitamins or other things, nutriments like that, and some of them would actually use the sugar pill. Less than 2% used the sugar pill, and the rest of the almost 60% used nutraceuticals, yet they believed that they were placebos. Now, God, I believe that that's a shame all by itself for somebody to say that my nutraceuticals that I use are placebos.
Mm-hmm.
Don't they understand that there is a real function in the body for these things? Probably.
No, they don't. That's the problem.
I don't. They're more legitimate function in the body for the nutraceuticals than for the pharmaceuticals.
Yep.
And in actuality, we're helping the patient's immune system, helping the patient respond to getting rid of poisons in the body, and helping the patient in those circumstances find their own body recovering. So they weren't giving placebos, but the way it was answered, because of the ignorance of the physician, and not only that, but the blatancy of the news media to make physicians look bad,
mm-hmm.
they distort the facts. So, you know, figures never lie, but liars figure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's an old story about there.
And they do, too. Hey, I have a couple questions for you here on the Fast Chat.
Go ahead.
We've got people that want to know about taking fiber on a daily basis, and if you know about zeolite in powder form, and then
okay,
also...
Okay, I have... Yeah, zeolite is one of those substances that people have been touting for detoxification, especially mercury, and some people have said, oh, zeolite's going to get rid of your poisons for cancer and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I do my autonomic testing, and the way I use these things is if they test, then I'll use them.
Mm-hmm.
I have tested zeolite in a lot of patients, and I've seen maybe 10% of the patients that I think it works on autonomic testing.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't consider zeolite as a primary thing, not like I find my metal-free to work. Metal-free has a much greater percentage of operation where it works, somewhere in the vicinity of 80 or 90%. Fiber, we covered fiber to some degree in the meeting. Fiber is very important. Fiber causes bulk in the intestinal tract, which is good to move your intestines along because you want intestinal motility and you want the bowels to empty on a regular basis so the body doesn't have an opportunity to be reabsorbing the toxins that are trying to be discharged from your stool. And if you're obstipated or constipated, you're not going to be moving the bowels along and getting them out. Fiber affords the opportunity, but there's two kinds of fiber.
Right.
There's soluble fiber and there's insoluble fiber. Insoluble fiber makes the bowels move. Soluble fiber absorbs toxins. Oat bran is a soluble fiber, but in order to get enough of it on board to do something, you're taking something in the vicinity of 1,100 or 1,200 calories of oat bran to account for what you need. Chlorella is a great soluble fiber, and it sops up toxic chemicals, it sops up toxic heavy metals, and it's a wonderful fiber to clean out the body. And do I recommend...
It's not too expensive either.
Not expensive. And do I recommend fiber? I do recommend fiber for sure.
How about wild oregano?
I'm not a great one on the herbs.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a great one on the herbs. I don't really use them a lot, and I haven't spent a lot of time learning the herbs. And I would have to yield to people who do herbology, whether they feel it's important or not.
Yeah, I know a lot of people ask me about that, and I am not a great fan of oregano. And the whole reason is because it's an allergen for type O's, and so that, you know, you don't want to put something in your body to heal it if it's actually going to cause any kind of an allergic response down at the blood vessel level. But the other thing, too, is it's really well known for, you know, for antiviral, antibacterial stuff, but not specifically for toxins. And so...
You talk about what you did about the allergens and the issues there. There are several manufacturers who have put together packages of powder,
mm-hmm.
which include a whole bunch of herbs, a whole bunch of fruits, a whole bunch of vegetables. Oregano would be one of these things that are thrown into there. And they take these things on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Anytime you take anything in that kind of a powder form, or you're taking something on a daily basis, I can virtually guarantee that there will be monstrous numbers of people who will become allergic to them.
Oh, sure.
I had a patient come to me from St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands, come to Florida to see me. And she came up several times, and she had major sickness. And we did our food allergy testing on the patient. And she came up with over 35 different things that she was allergic to, and I was, like, blown away. We tested for 115 to 120, and you came up with 35 out of 120? Where do you come up with 25% of the foods you're allergic to? That's crazy.
Well, I find that with people all the time. I even had a couple of patients who were allergic to rice.
Yeah, well, here's the issue. They're taking it in supplement form.
Mm-hmm.
And when they take it in supplement form, it's coming in a different way, and it's coming in every day.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily the best for them. If you're taking foods and you have an allergy problem and you finally cleared the allergy and you want to reintroduce the food and you're able to take it, we recommend that you don't use that food but once every 4 days.
Right.
At most.
Yeah, rotation.
And the rotation diet will keep you away from the serious complications of food allergy.
Well, it's like, so, I tell my patients, too, if they're allergic to wheat, which pretty much every type O is, and type Bs, and half of the type As, and I noticed myself, being a type O, that, and being brought up Italian, you know, if I eat pasta, I might be okay for one meal, but I get all the drowsiness and the carbo load, you know, because it turns into the narcotic for me. But then if I eat it a second time that day, it starts to swell my skin up. The third time...
Well, that's what I'm saying. So it depends upon the amount. Usually they say if you eat it that one day, eat what you need and that's the end of it. But if you have a serious situation like that, I would say, like I said in the meeting, the probability that when people have food allergies, the IgE and the IgG food allergies, behind that is petrochemical toxicity.
Now, explain that a little bit, if you would. How are people getting the petrochemicals?
Petrochemicals are part of the everything that's out there. You go into the solvents. The solvents are petrochemicals. Toluene, benzene, naphthalene, formaldehyde. All of these solvents are all petrochemicals, and the petrochemicals are also part of what goes into the soil. When you have the residues of gasoline in the petrochemical. You're burning all these fuels. They're all over. They poison everything, and it comes in with the toxin, with the the pesticides are also, some of it is petrochemical. So you are going to have all of that chemical. It's more of the overall chemical toxicity, your inability to clear it. When we talk about what we have to do to clear toxins, there's a lot of different ways, but among the things are to take the chlorella or the soluble fiber, to use certain specific chelating agents, to take the things that regenerate glutathione in the body so that the body will have its ability to continuously have something to detoxify. Eat cruciferous vegetables because it feeds that system of helping you clean. That's the cytochrome P450 system in the liver. But the other way to get rid of solvents and to get rid of these petrochemicals is also through sweating.
Mm-hmm.
Much of that stuff comes in through the skin. If you put petroleum jelly on your body, you can wind up with petrochemical going in.
Man.
Theoretically, anything that's got a petrolatum base.
You know, and they give that to animals. You know, that's what they make the hairball remedies out of, you know, and they tell, oh, give it to your cat, you know, and I'm like, why do I want to give Vaseline to my cat, you know?
Well, let me tell you something. I was just talking to my brother-in-law at dinner today this evening, and we got to the point of talking about farm-raised fish, and he was talking about shrimp farming, and he said, you know, they use formaldehyde in the shrimp. If they have shrimp that are not well, that are not sick, they soak them in formaldehyde. They take them out of the United States where it can't be used here. The formaldehyde cleans them up, and they send the fish back in.
Oh, jeez.
And I went to the Internet because I said I'm having trouble with that. And I went to the Internet, and I looked up. I went to Google, did an advanced search, and looked up formaldehyde and shrimp. Just those two words.
Mm-hmm.
I came up with a bunch of articles about how shrimp farming is done and how they load up the shrimp farms and they use these things like formaldehyde to clean up the waste that's in the bottom of a shrimp farm. Shrimp farms are only good for maybe 5 to 7 years before it gets so poisonous down there they can't use the land anymore.
Yeesh.
And they move to another area, and they're cleaning up all of the poisons that come in there with things like formaldehyde. You're going to tell me that's not in the shrimp? I don't care what you say.
Oh, man. Well, I guess I crossed shrimp off my list.
Well, I mean, they're farm-raised. They're not, you know, they're not fresh stuff. They're farm-raised.
Oh.
And I'm looking at this thing, and I'm saying, wow. We talk about farm-raised fish in some areas where they've been using a lot of garbage that they feed to the fish in the pens, and so some of the fish were loaded with PCBs and dioxin and other stuff that gets into that garbage.
Yep.
And there was a lot of complaints about that. I think that they've done things. I haven't heard anything about it within the last 2 years. I think that there was a recognition that they would not be allowed to sell that fish unless they cleaned it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that much of it has been cleaned up. I hope so. I don't know.
I mean, the recommendation for the naturopaths have been looking at for the last couple of years has been, you know, tell people don't eat any farm-raised fish and to watch where the salmon comes from, too. You know,
well, no question, but most salmon that you have, Atlantic salmon, is farm-raised for the most part, and the only salmon that isn't is the wild Alaskan salmon that you get. And there's certain runs, like this year, there's not been very many salmon runs. I have a place that I get my canned salmon from and my canned tuna from out in Oregon, where I know he's getting wild Alaskan salmon that he's fishing himself and bringing it to a specific cannery. And they have not had any salmon runs this year. They're out. They don't have any.
Wow.
So for some of the specific salmon they have, there's a few salmon they do have, but for other salmon they just don't have it because there were no salmon runs. And so there's a limit, and everybody in the world is eating fish.
Right.
It's healthy reasons for eating fish, but again, you have to look at what fish you're eating, and then if you're going to eat them, you got to take additional precautions in your body for making sure you're cleaning. We can't hide from the toxins.
Right.
I don't want people to get this idea that, oh, I gotta hide from the toxins, gotta put a bubble around my body, I can't eat this,
yeah,
I can't
that doesn't
touch
work.
That. Because that doesn't work. We're in a contaminated society and world, and we have to learn how to live within it. And the way you learn how to live within it is the fact that you recognize that it's there, and then you help your body to do the detoxification. In line with that, maybe the people who have to concern themselves and worry about it might be best knowing your genetic basis, the detoxygenome basis, so that if you don't have a problem with that, if your cytochrome P450 system is really good, you have minimal changes in it, and you're not going to get sick, don't go crazy. And if you are of the genetic makeup that you will have a problem, then I think it's important for you to go ahead and take into account that that's the issue and make sure that you do spend the time detoxifying your body on a regular basis. And
well,
then
I think,
you will maintain good health.
You talked about the muscle testing, too, and the reason I like to use muscle testing with people with any nutraceutical that I'm going to give them is because of those enzyme problems in the liver. So when I took my environmental medicine portion with Dr. Walter Crinion, who had a big clinic up in Washington for years, anyway, the latest news that I had seen at that point was, you know, the first discoveries about a few of the enzyme systems in the liver, and then the next time he came back, he had like 6 or 8 pages of just one enzyme system after another that they were discovering. And we all sat there stunned looking at this and going, what do we do? He said, nobody knows. It's a crapshoot.
Well, that's actually what you're saying is absolutely right. I use my muscle testing. You can use muscle testing to determine whether somebody has a food allergy or not. If you you want to check for food allergies, you just put the foods on the patient and see which ones they're responding to. Autonomic testing will give you those basic generalities. I'm not going to give you the IgG, but many times we come up with some pretty close similarities to it. And of course, if somebody is grossly allergic, we'll find that. If you put a food on and a strong muscle goes weak, you know that they don't want that food.
Yeah, exactly, and I've had people change. You know, sometimes they don't want the supplement, sometimes they do. If I have someone who's got a lot of multiple chemical sensitivities, I will have them bring in the actual food the way they prepare it, and then test them with that. They just come in with baggies, you know. But
they have to come in. I have them bring the bottles in, and I go through everything also.
Oh yeah,
I go
definitely.
Through it. And if we're doing the testing on the patients, we'll go through the testing and say this is good, this is bad, this is bad, this is good, and tell them which ones are there, and just put those bottles away because I don't want you to take them though.
Right, and then, you know, you can retest them later and see if they can handle it.
Absolutely, if things clean up or things change, and they will change. The body is constantly in a state of flux, and it can get itself better if it's given the opportunity. We have the potential to rehabilitate our body. We didn't get into talking about the amino acids. I don't know if you have time to talk about it now.
No, we're about out of time. I am going to have you back on the show in December.
Okay.
So I figured we can talk about the amino acid part there because that is just fascinating stuff. And I'm going to have Dr. Hinz on also probably the end of November talking about neurotransmitters and amino acids. So, yeah, we have quite a few more discussions that we need to have, Dr. Stein.
Okay.
And I really appreciate you coming on the show. I do have a couple more questions for you.
Go ahead.
A question about how about cod?
Cod? Cod is a bottom fish, but you know what they're doing right now, I just saw something very, very interesting. They're starting to farm-raise cod, but they're doing it over in Norway, and they're doing it in the fjords of Norway where they have over 1,000-foot deep water. So maybe even more than that, they're going down with the fjords in the cold, cold fjords over 1,000 feet deep. That water won't get contaminated. That water won't be so poisoned and polluted that the fish will be worthless, because cod is basically a good fish. And I would think that those fish, they're doing very well in Norway, and they're supposed to be soon bringing them to the United States. Cod is an okay fish.
Okay, good. That's good news. And then also, what do you feel about using collagen?
Collagen?
Dietary collagen.
Dietary collagen, why would you want to use it? It's just another protein that you're going to eat. Why would you specifically take collagen?
Well, I don't know. That's one of the questions here.
No, but it's going to be digested. It's like any other protein. Why? If I take a piece of meat That meat's got collagen in it. If I chew off the edge of a bone, it's got collagen. Is that any different than taking somebody giving collagen? It has no value. Once it's going into your stomach as a nutritional, it's going to be digested and broken down into its parts for nutrition in the body. It has no specific benefit in that regard. The same way, you can't give somebody glutathione by mouth.
Right.
And expect the glutathione to go ahead and work at the level in the liver. I don't care how much you give it. It's broken down as one of the other proteins, as a component of the protein that goes into the body.
Yeah, they've been trying to make a stabilized glutathione now for a while, and there's a couple companies that put some stuff out that's I've forgotten what they put with it now that gives you at least a little bit, but my favorite way is still intravenous because, boy, you get the effect right away.
Well, I think the only thing that I use on glutathione that's different, first of all, you want to restore glutathione. Alpha-lipoic acid, N-acetylcysteine, or the sysreplete are all ways to restore glutathione. From a nutritional point of view, the other way to get glutathione in is the liposomal delivery system with the liposomes that are not broken down in the intestinal tract, but they absorb through the intestine into the veins, into the bloodstream, and in the bloodstream, the liposomes break down and release glutathione IV, the same as you would give somebody an IV. So that way is a way of taking oral glutathione and getting it to where it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and of course that's the more expensive version.
It's less expensive than the IV.
Oh yeah, it's less expensive than IV, of course, and it's a lot less painful.
Your patient can have it and take it a couple of times a week if you want to go that route, and it's certainly a lot less expensive and more convenient for the patient, so you don't have to have the patient in your office every couple of days for another IV glutathione.
Oh, right.
So
yeah.
That's one of the advantages to that as opposed to somebody coming in. I mean, I use the liposomal delivery system for the EDTA rather than have a patient sit down for 4-hour chelation in my office.
Oh, yeah. I don't even bother with chelation in the office, mainly because, you know, I have experienced a lot of people who want to do that because it's cash cow. But I found that the oral chelating agents are just as good. And they don't cost anywhere near what the intravenous chelation costs.
I'm not convinced of every oral chelating agent. If I use LipoFlow, I find it very beneficial. And I've taken blocked vessels, and 2 months later I have them open. I have blocked vessels in the legs that had Doppler, no vessels. And 2 months later I have palpable vessels in the legs using EDTA by liposomal delivery and using accompanying enzymes. Like the Vascuzyme or the Wobenzyme or Nattokinase. So those are additional things that can be used for that purpose.
Yeah, I've found there's a couple that I've used on people. The only one that got me nervous was with my mother and her carotid arteries when the plaques were clearing.
Yeah.
All of a sudden she had like two little thin bridges. And I said, oh, no, we're not going to mess with that. You're going to the hospital because if the ends break off, poof, you get a stroke.
Well, how much of a bridge did she break off? I don't know. That's the difference.
Well, she didn't break it off. I took her in and they did the carotid endarterectomies on her.
Oh, they did carotid endarterectomies. All right.
Yeah, because I just was like, no, I could see that the risk was there. And I thought, I'm not going to do that.
If you keep the patients on the enzymes on a regular basis, that you're going to have a lot of that.
The enzymes are important.
Will work. So if you give a person a significant amount of nattokinase, even in the place of what seems like an acute coronary, it'll open it up on them.
Oh, I've done that. I had blood clots that were hitting my lungs for 2 weeks, and I was taking nattokinase and had them completely dissolved on one side when I got freon poisoning. I ended up in the hospital at a heart hospital, and they told me I was crazy. I said, you know, I am a physician. I know what I'm talking about. And they didn't believe me. They did the VQ scan, and then they said, well, there's artifact. I pointed to where they were, and they said, how'd you know that's where they were? I said, I told you I had two blood clots that hit my lung. And they said, well, they're small. And then I told them where the other blood clots were in the other leg. And when they found them on the Doppler, they couldn't believe it. And they kept treating me like I was just growing a second head, you know, when I tell them these things. But I told them.
Well, that's the doubting Thomas is all over the world.
Oh, yeah. As soon as they heard that I was taking natokinase and it was oral, they said, that stuff doesn't work. And the next thing out of the guy's mouth was, what is that stuff? And yeah. I just kind of looked at him and said, you know, I'm used to you guys doing this. I had 30 years as an RN. But I said, you know, I'm telling you it works. And then he did the D-dimer test, and he said, oh, my gosh, your products of fibrinogen breakdown are off the charts. I've never seen anything like this. I said, I told you it works.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so I very much am so appreciative of what you and Dr. Hinz are doing, because you're really a breath of fresh air for us. And like I said, you were preaching to the choir, you know.
Well, we've recognized that when we've gone around the country, and now this was for me. I mean, Dr. Hinz has been doing the seminars now, I think it's 8 or 9 years, and I just joined him this fall series, and I'll be with him now going forward, but... this was our fourth seminar, and we've had many of them had naturopaths in them. Yours was the biggest group that we had, mm-hmm. and it is enjoyable to talk, because at least people do relate. We don't have arguments.
Yeah, we know what it's about. So
yeah.
I've got to have you back on, because people have so many more questions they wanted to ask you. Now they're all looking forward to December. So.
Okay,
so
very
that's good. Yeah, so thank you so much for being on. I really appreciate it, and I enjoyed talking with your wife earlier, and I told her I thought you were quite the hoot. So
Thank you.
You're a lot of fun, and I appreciate that. And if you would give people your contact information, if you'd like to field any questions from them, that would be great.
All right. My telephone number in my office is 954-581-8585, and my email, you can direct emails to me at my website, www.proloshot.com. They will come through to my email. I will read them, and I will refer them back. I will answer you back as soon as I can. Again, any information you want to know about what I do, you can find on my website. And if anybody wants to listen to my radio shows, No Bones About It, there's on my website, you can find on the left side of the website, there's a site map, and there's a listen live icon, which will bring you to the times that the shows are on live. But there's also on the bottom of that list a podcast. And if you go to the podcast, you can look at any of the archived shows for the last 2 years. Any of the live shows that were done in the last 2 years are archived there, including the shows that I did with Dr. Hinz and with some other guests, and pick up any one of them, listen to it. And if you have questions from what I have, you can get in touch with me through the website, and I would welcome those questions. And I thank you very much for the opportunity to be on the radio with you.
Oh, you're so welcome, and I'm so glad that you could do this on such short notice.
I am right now. It's 12:15.
Yeah. Well, I know the listeners appreciate it, because there's lots of comments here on the Fast Blast. So one of them just said, Namaste, Dr. Stein. And thank you so much for being on. And we have been talking with Dr. Alvin Stein, M.D., orthopedic medicine and surgery, pain reduction therapy, and nutritionally wise.
thank you so much for being on.
It's been a lot of fun.
Yes, I'm
looking forward to the next one.
Okay, we'll look forward to it also.
Okay,
thanks a lot. All right, bye-bye now.
And also, thanks to our sponsor, and that would be Hydramay Skin Nutrition. And if you guys haven't tried it, please do try it. Marjorie has kept the price down low. It is actual nutrition for your skin. It gets absorbed in vitamins and minerals and things like that. And non-greasy. It's really wonderful. And so is the creator. So we've had about a year now to try on the Hydramay, and it's really amazing. So you guys will love that stuff. And thank you so much, listeners. I love that you are so interested in learning more about nutrition, because that really is one of the secrets to a good life. So thanks for tuning in, and until next week, be happy, be healthy, and be who you really are. Nighty-night.
children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Come, my children, time to awake from your sleep. Rise to a new day with each your soul to keep. Do 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 do